Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James Todd Bennett, and I represent the appellant Rajinder Pal Singh in this habeas appeal. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, if I may. This case basically presents the next step beyond Singh, which was the jurisdictional case decided by this court back in 2007. In this case, we have a failure to notify of a BIA decision. The issue, since that is an error, an omission, it occurred after the entry of the final administrative order. It clearly falls within Singh jurisdiction. So I believe the district court was correct in finding jurisdiction under Singh. The question then becomes the issue that wasn't answered in Singh but was discussed as to what the district court could do after a remand is whether or not there is any remedy or any jurisdiction really by the Board of Immigration Appeals to resolve the issue. First of all, there's no mandatory jurisdiction to exhaust administratively before the habeas is filed in this case, because the proposed remedy by the government would have been a motion to reopen, which is discretionary, not mandatory. So as far as a mandatory exhaustion goes, under Noriega-Lopez, I don't believe there is no mandatory exhaustion.
Why couldn't the court have prudential exhaustion, though, which is also available? I mean, that's the question left open in, I guess we'll call it Singh number one. We said we don't know what procedural or substantive hurdles one might find in the district court. Here the district court said you should exhaust. Why isn't that reasonable?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the prudential doctrine, the first issue we have to address to fully understand why prudential doctrine doesn't apply in this case is, does the BIA even have in the first instance jurisdiction to issue even consider the issue on a motion to reopen? Our problem is this is a regulatory scheme, and this is a regulatory agency, and it's controlled by its own regulations. The problem here is for a motion to reopen, the BIA has to have a decision, and then the reconsideration has to be of that particular decision. And decision is not really defined specifically in the regulations, but in at least two regulations, in 1003.1F and also G, it does discuss a written decision. So then the question, and then in addition, as pointed out in the brief, a motion to reopen has to consider, new facts. So we first have to figure out whether there's been a decision by the BIA and then whether there's new facts that can be considered.
Tell me, before you go any further, we now have this new statement by the Attorney General of the United States, which he says is going to take effect immediately. Now, you've used the regulations, but what about the Attorney General's new determination of how we get to this particular issue?
Interesting question, Your Honor, and that is under a COPIA.
Thank you.
It's under Copion, very interesting decision. First of all, the BIA, as in the dissent in Singh, finds that there's no Fifth Amendment right to no Fifth Amendment right to an effective assistance of counsel. So it's not constitutionally based. It's just you have a statutory right to counsel, and that's it. How that impacts this case eliminates one of the probably the primary, and it's probably the only remedy that the government can propose, which is the tolling statute. As I understand the tolling precedents in this circuit and in other circuits as well, it's constitutionally based. It's a Fifth Amendment due process claim. Here the Attorney General has withdrawn Lozada. He's withdrawn Lozada, which basically says we're recognizing there are circuits to say there is a due process right here, and so you have to go through these steps to do it. Now we no longer have the Fifth Amendment basis for the administrative order, for the administrative motion to reopen, rather, I'm sorry. So if there's no constitutional issue. So even though this circuit has law under Lozada, addressing Lozada, that would say that if it was a
Can I stop you there? It seems to me there's kind of two parts to this. One is Now the BIA says, oh, well, surprise, we've landed on a position here in the last, you know, 28 days of the Bush administration. We do have jurisdiction to reopen. We also have made this constitutional ruling. It seems to me those are two separate things. If you sent it back for exhaustion under the theory of exhaustion could, I mean, that they could reopen, in other words, they have the authority to reopen, then you would get an answer. But the answer wouldn't have to be predicated on a constitutional aspect of the Attorney General's ruling, would it?
Well, the problem is the controlling statute, there's three levels of which you could probably get a case like this reopened in the government's theory. First one's the statute. That's clearly out the window because it has a 90-day bar on it.
Right.
So that's long since gone by the wayside. Second one would be a filing an administrative motion sua sponte to reissue the decision. That is problematic because under the Attorney General's own decisions and regulations, you can only do that if it's an error by the BIA itself, which clearly isn't the case here, or essentially that's what they're looking for. And if you can't find that, then sua sponte doesn't apply. And anyway, in any event, that's a discretionary decision that's not reviewable under the precedence of this circuit in under Achimian. Now, going to the tolling issue, that's the
— What about your — what about a motion from the petitioner to reopen out of time because of extraordinary circumstances of what's happened here and simply making a motion to reopen and then seeing what the answer is?
Well, under Copian, that pretty much puts an end to that, because if it's a Fifth Amendment-based claim for tolling, the Fifth Amendment no longer applies under Copian. So if the Fifth Amendment doesn't apply, then you don't have tolling anymore.
Well, wait, two things there. Leaving tolling out of it, you don't need the Fifth Amendment to say to the BIA, look, I didn't get to file an appeal, and all I want is to reopen so that we can reset the date, and then I can get a lawyer who understands, you know, 30 days, and we file the appeal. Why couldn't you do that? Then you're concerned because you don't think — you think you would be out of time if you lost for a potential habeas? Is that the problem?
No. I just think that the toll — aside from my argument that there is no tolling at all, period, under Copian as a result, if there's no constitutional basis, where's the tolling?
You don't need a constitution for tolling. I mean, in other words, the BIA is not the habeas forum. I'm just, you know, this is a complicated issue, as I know you appreciate, because you understand all the intersection of these laws. But if you just go back to the BIA and you say, look, now you've said that you have jurisdiction for sure to take a look at this, I'm just asking you, my client never got to file an appeal. I'm not asking for you to say it's a Fifth Amendment right or a constitutional right related to ineffective assistance of counsel. I'm just saying, here's the situation, please reopen. And then the BIA will say yes or no. Why couldn't you do that? Why wouldn't it be reasonable for you to exhaust that remedy before coming to the federal court and invoking a potential constitutional remedy?
To answer the question, working backwards from Copian, Copian basically takes a super big scoop of jurisdiction out of the judicial review statute in terms of still having jurisdiction over post-decisional errors such as this. Problem is, under the Attorney General's own regulation, and with all due respect to his representations in Copian, his regulations do not provide for that kind of jurisdiction. It's very clear what the jurisdiction is. You review a decision, as I was discussing earlier.
Then it seems to me that's a – in other words, that's another layer. It's kind of like each one peeling back. Singh left this open. If you went back and you exhausted and the Attorney General said, yes, we'll reissue that, you wouldn't argue with them, right?
As a practical matter, no.
Okay.
As a matter of law, yes.
Problem solved. You don't have to argue with the Attorney General over that. If the Attorney General then says, oh, catch 22, I have Copian, but I have this regulation, so it doesn't mean what it says, then you would have an appeal on that issue, which would really relate to a legal issue and the precise issue you're now raising. So in other words, you might win, and then you wouldn't need us. If you lost, you would have the potential to come back, depending on the posture of the case.
I see my time's up.
Please go ahead.
I fully appreciate the Court's interest in limiting the number of immigration cases coming into this Court. I think that's been a longstanding problem. But I don't think that this mechanism is really practical in this sense, in this case in particular. First of all, Singh is no longer in the country, so there's no longer any jurisdiction for a motion to reopen. So to fashion a remedy, if this Court were to remand and ask for, if I were to ask for leave to file under Copion a motion based on this new decision, there would have to be accompanied by an order to bring Singh back into the country in order to acquire jurisdiction. So that would be an alternative remedy based under Copion if this Court finds
it. So he's not in the country and he's not in custody.
Correct. He's out of the country. Now, at one point in history, that would give habeas jurisdiction. In fact, it gives habeas jurisdiction because he was removed while it was filed here. But the problem for administrative jurisdiction, it does not. They've lost jurisdiction. Now, in the past, as a practical matter, through negotiation, we've been able to negotiate the return of the alien in order to reinstitute jurisdiction and then start over again. But that would be the only way that Copion could, as a practical matter, apply at this point.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? Let's hear from the Attorney General and see if we can keep sorting this out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we can hear you, and if we can't, we'll tell you. How's that? Keep your voice up, please. Yeah.
The district court properly denied an habeas petition in this case on prudential grounds, because the petitioner failed to exhaust his administrative remedies by filing a motion to reopen for the BIA, asking the BIA to reissue its decision. The BIA, as the court well knows, has a well-established procedure for dealing with ineffective counsel claims. The petitioner deliberately bypassed that procedure, came to the district court, and asked the district court to do something they should have asked the BIA.
Well, to be fair, up until that point, the petitioner didn't have a ghost of a chance of any type of claim after the final order has been entered. And it's only because the Attorney General, in his wisdom and good judgment, now says that even though the ineffective assistance, or what does he call it? Yeah, occurs after the final order, we will now take a look at it. So it may be that the district court was wrong, but has become right by the Attorney General's determination. So I suppose what we really have to decide is whether or not, in fact, because of the Attorney General's change of how he's going to handle these cases and apparent willingness to entertain ineffective work of counsel subsequent to the final order, whether or not the district judge becomes right now and that counsel's got to go to the BIA. Now, that issue is the one that's before us, and counsel says, I can't do that because the petitioner's out of the country and is not under jurisdiction. Now, we need some help from you, representing the Attorney General. How do we deal with that?
Well, let me take your first point first, Your Honor. I don't think that's the most reasonable or accurate reading of the Attorney General's opinion at any point. I think the Attorney General did recognize that the BIA has taken, or at least a consistent decision from the BIA in the past, as to whether or not it had jurisdiction to entertain a motion to reopen asking the BIA to reach its decision. In this circuit, however, it's clear under matter or mere injury in the bottom that this circuit has said the BIA has the authority to entertain a motion to reopen even after the end of the final removal order, and that an alien should follow that procedure. And I can actually read the language to you from law of the INS 204-1241. 425-126, the court says, reverse notes that because the assistance of which she complains occurred after the board's review, this appeal is the first instance in which she had a way to complain. This is not, however, the first form to which she might have complained. Indeed, the board has laid out a comprehensive procedure that a petitioner should follow to support such a claim, and our sister circuits have adopted such reasoning. So this circuit has said, and obviously this circuit controls, that there is a procedure which an alien has to follow, even if the alleged ineffective assistance occurred after the interview.
Right. Well, here's my question about that. I don't know exactly what the Ninth Circuit meant when they said that, because if you look at those cases, they're really Lozada cases, and this district court didn't say you didn't follow Lozada, in effect, which is a whole separate thing. And so I'm wondering here, assuming Lozada is in effect at the time all of this is filed, I'm not sure a lot of fits quite precisely to this district court's order.
I understand, Your Honor, that it, you know, the cases that Lozada relies upon may not be fully supportive of the decision of Lozada, but that you have Herringer reiterating the holding of Lozada, and whether or not the reasoning in Lozada and Herringer is compelling, that's the law of the Ninth Circuit. And I think even if there was some potential doubt as to whether or not if the petitioner had followed that procedure, what the BIA would have done. And conceivably, the BIA may have said, sorry, we don't have jurisdiction to address this. Well, your remedy at that point is to say you're wrong, BIA, and file a petition for review of the Ninth Circuit. But I think the possibility that the BIA might not do what you want it to do doesn't excuse your requirement to exhaust your administrative remedy.
What about footnote 4 in Dieringer that says, a claim of ineffective assistance may recurring after the BIA ruled may be raised with the BIA by a motion to reopen. And it goes on to say, however, failure to do so does not bar this court from hearing the claim.
And I think that's true. And the distinction I would make is that, as we're saying in this case, the district court does have jurisdiction over such a claim. And I think this court's opinion in Humberty saying made that clear. But whether or not the court has jurisdiction is a different question than whether or not, assuming the district court has jurisdiction, whether the district court should say you need to exhaust your administrative remedies.
Well, is it true that if we were to uphold the district court's order here and he went back to, quote, exhaust his remedies, that he really can't do that now because he's out of the country?
Well, just two things on that question. First of all, I think the appropriate time to be looking at this is at the time he filed his habeas petition. At the time he filed his habeas petition, he was in the country.
Well, yes, but that's not the question you're
asking. Well, my question is, if he comes now, is the BIA going to say, as a matter of law, out of luck, Charlie, you're not in the country, or is it going to say, I'll take a look at it?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think generally,
do you want to know the answer? In other words, wouldn't another option, which no one's mentioned here, is just a practical resolution internally, administratively, with this particular petitioner to get an administrative restart date, in effect, so that he can do whatever he's going to do in terms of filing an appeal. So I just say that that's an option one could consider between the government and the petitioner.
And obviously that's something I will address with my client if the panel is likely to do that. I will say, though, again, you know, if the answer is unclear, and I haven't been pointed to any regulation that petitioner is saying that the BIA will not entertain a motion to reopen in this context, asking the BIA to reach its decision simply because the petitioner is not here. But again, I think
his response is that the BIA says that it doesn't have the authority if the person is out of the country, at least to do it in response to a motion to reopen.
Right, I understand that's what he's saying. I mean, my response to that is I'm not sure what regulation is citing for that proposition. But my response would be file your motion, see what the BIA says. The fact that I don't think he can stay is futile to do that.
Well, what if his regulation regulation, let me just ask you this. I hear his argument as one of futility. You have prudential exhaustion, and one of the end games of prudential exhaustion is whether there's futility. If he has a regulation and he says to the court, the district court, it would be futile because now that my client is out of the country, there's nothing that can be done, then it would seem to me that there's a futility question. Now, maybe that's something the district court needs to resolve, not us. But if the district court or us said, yes, you're right, there is no jurisdiction under the regulation and it would be futile, then what is your response?
Well, I think that would present a different question. And the district court would say, well, it is futile. If at the time the case was argued in the district court, the alien had been removed, and the district court said, under this regulation, the BIA no longer has authority to do what the government is telling me I should do, the district court would address that. That wasn't the case at the time the case petition was filed and the time the district court decided the case. I think that's a relevant time to look at. As in Gamapuga, which is another case that the court addresses the same situation where the alien had been removed from the country at the time this court decided the case. This court said, you had a requirement at the time that the district court proceeded from going on to exhaust your administrative remedies. The fact that now you might be time barred, that's unfortunate, but that's the law of our circuit. That is a prudential matter. You have a requirement to exhaust your administrative remedies. The court didn't say, well, now that you've been removed from the country, our analysis should change. So I think, finally, maybe you can include it. The fact that he's now been removed from the country shouldn't exceed the fact that he couldn't have exhausted the administrative remedies and the constitution.
Mr. Olson, your time's running down. Did you finish?
Go ahead.
Your time's running down. I wish you'd tell us what, in your view, is the bottom line of this court's decision on this case as it is presently postured.
In terms of what I think the result should be in this case?
Yes.
I think the result should be that this court should affirm the district court and say that, as a prudential matter, the alien should have exhausted his administrative remedies by asking the BIA to issue this decision. And then, even if the district court said, well, okay, I excuse the fact that you didn't do that, that the petitioner didn't provide the district court with any evidence that would have helped the district court make the ineffective assistance of counsel determination. I mean, there was this allegation made in the habeas petition that, hey, my attorney didn't file a timely petition for review. But the district court needed more than that to make a determination. We didn't have the opportunity to hear from defense counsel, unlike in Deeringer, where it's undisputed that the petition for review was filed a day late. Here, we don't know. It may have been that the petitioner never hired the attorney to file a petition for review. They may have had a conversation that this adverse credibility finding is supported by substantial evidence. We don't have a prayer of success in the Ninth Circuit. We're not going to file a petition for review. See how much time you can buy before you have to leave the country. There may have been any number of rational explanations for why a petition for review is not filed. We just don't know. And I think it's the petitioner's obligation, if he wants the district court to excuse his lack of compliance with the administrative requirements, he has to give the district court something that will help the district court make a determination. And none of that is done.
Thank you.
Let me ask a question, if I could. Let's assume, for sake of argument, that the situation was one where the board would not consider petitioner's claim because the claim began after the final order. So in that instance, the district court was wrong because there's nothing to exhaust. Let's just assume that. If we assume that, does the district court then become right? Because the Attorney General says here that he thinks the better view is the jurisdiction to consider deficit performative claims where they are predicated on lawyer conduct that occurred after the final order of removal has been entered. So he has changed, if there was a change. He has changed and now said the board does have jurisdiction. So then does that make the district court right? And under the new game plan, he has to go to the board.
That's right. Even if the Attorney General is right, there isn't Fifth Amendment right to assistance of
if in fact the board wouldn't have listened to him initially, then it was futile and the district court was wrong. If we assume that was correct ruling, it would be the position of the government that that has now been changed by what the Attorney General has changed, and they now has the ability to go to the board. So then the next argument would be, is that, when he goes back to district court, the next argument will be that is futile because I can't get any jurisdiction. My client is not here in the United States. Would the statement by the Attorney General be sufficient that the board would entertain the petition even though the petitioner is still out of the country?
To be honest, Your Honor, I'm not sure what the BIA would say in that situation. That's not spelled out in the AG's opinion. I don't think that the AG was contemplating the situation of whether or not it would have jurisdiction and entertaining that motion despite it.
Well, we could ask you that question and you could provide us an answer on behalf of the Attorney General, correct? If we were to ask that following argument.
I was of the opinion that he had thought about it because in his document he indicates a view about tolling to allow this to happen. And I had assumed that the board would take a look at it and grant, because he had jurisdiction before, the tolling allows to have jurisdiction. It may be that there's a lot of these questions that will now have to be sorted out because of what has transpired, and it might be that we can't do much for you other than send it back and let the district court order apply and see what happens when counsel goes to the board to see if they can sort it out. I suspect there's a lot of unanswered questions. But as far as you're concerned, as of now, you really can't assert what is going to happen.
That's true, and I agree, Your Honor. There may be all sorts of unanswered questions. I think for purposes of this appeal, I don't think those questions need to be sorted out. At the time the district court will have to, the district court for correctly applied the law. Those questions may be answered in future cases. I don't think this is the case in which those questions need to be answered.
Well, that brings up the issue of can we now look at it in terms of the Attorney General's letter? You're suggesting that because the district court was right at that time, that we don't need to look into that. But doesn't the Attorney General has now said this goes as of now? Don't we have to give that credence? Or does that occur only for filings that take place after the Attorney General's letter?
I think the Attorney General's recent opinion is completely consistent with the approach that the government has taken in this case from the outset, as well as the approach that the district court took in this case. That there is the ability, the BIA does have the authority to entertain motions to reopen, and the BIA should have asked the BIA to do that. Now, and I think nothing in AG's opinion said that at any time previous to AG's recent opinion that the BIA did have that. I don't think that's a fair reading of the decision.
Well, he talks about two different
views. It was mixed. I mean, it depended on which panel. And so it was unclear.
It may have been unclear, but I don't think that's enough to say it's
futile. Paragraph.
See what the answer is, see what the BIA says.
At paragraph B, he outlines the split. And then he says, in my judgment, the better view, and the one I adopt today, is that the board has jurisdiction. So apparently he's recognizing that it depended a lot on what circuit you filed in.
I think that's wrong. And so he recognizes there were some consistent decisions. And he recognizes that it may depend on the circuit. In this circuit, the next survey is done. The BIA has that authority. Also, I think the fact that there were inconsistent decisions from the BIA on that question doesn't excuse the petitioner's obligation to ask the BIA. It may be, it could be that the BIA was at the start of the jurisdiction. He could have either gone to the next survey and said the BIA has it wrong, or he could have come back to the district court and said, I tried to exhaust.
So your view is, Your view is that when we decided Singh, we didn't leave this issue open. It was already decided in the Ninth Circuit?
That's my interpretation of your interpretation.
Okay.
Those decisions are about to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Bennett?
Sorry to run you over.
It's an interesting issue.
Do I get my 2 minutes?
At least.
Thank you. I probably won't use them all. First of all, I just want to reiterate that our position, I don't want to indicate that we're withdrawing basically on a practical matter under Copion, the fact that there is no jurisdiction for the lack of it. Since this failure to notify occurs after there is a decision, and that is beyond the regulatory scope of the jurisdiction of the Attorney General. Now, he can draft a new regulation, but at this point in history, regulatory definition of what a decision is and that being necessary for any motion to reopen under his regulations precludes this review of this particular error and omission that occurs after the issuance of the decision.
How do you square that with the Ninth Circuit's view and Lotta and Derringer that you have to exhaust in precisely this kind of a situation?
I don't think Derringer says you have to exhaust. I think it's more or less says in habeas setting, it, you know, be nice if you did, but it's not necessary.
What about Lotta?
Lotta is the interesting question. Lotta has long been regarded as being the threshold case that adopted Lozada in the Ninth Circuit. The problem is it's essentially dicta in this sense. Lotta was a petition for review proceeding in which there was a failure to prosecute. It was dismissed, and it was essentially a petition for reinstatement, recall a mandate, rather, and reinstate the proceeding. The Lozada portion of the decision is simply saying, well, there's this mechanism out here, but it doesn't really apply to this particular case because she's already gotten the petition recalled. She's gotten an extra year here, and she should be happy.
And Lotta's not an habeas case, correct?
Exactly. It's a petition, it's a judicial review case. Right. So and with the withdrawal of Lozada kicks yet another brick out from under Lotta as any kind of precedent in determining where the jurisdiction lies. As far as the lack of evidence, that issue wasn't raised downstairs in the district court, and I don't think it could be fairly raised on appeal unless we have a cross appeal, and we just simply don't have one here. So I don't think that issue is properly before the court at this point. And I have no more comments at this point.
Any questions? Thank you. We thank you both for the arguments. It's an interesting case given the intersection of the new opinion, so we appreciate your argument. The case just argued of Singh versus Chertoff is submitted.